in times gone by, it might have been something that you would have expected your granny to be drinking, but nowadays, gin is more likely to be the preferred beverage of choice with your hipster kid. And you may not even be cool enough to drink it yourself. I certainly found that. It's no longer a gin and tonic. It's a Hendrix, or it's a gunpowder Irish gin, or it's a Bertha's Revenge. They trot out all the numbers. But the upturn of popularity of gin has been mirrored by the huge growth of the gin distilling industry in Ireland, home to now a plethora of top-quality Irish producers. So what's behind this change of image of gin, and what does the future hold for our distillers? To discuss this and other questions of a gin nature, I'm delighted to be joined by three distillers intent on improving your G&T. They are the founder of Ballyvolan Gin Distilleries, Anthony Jackson; communications manager with the Shed Distillery up there in Drumshambo in County Leitrim is Emily Cox; and co-founder of Blackwater Distillery is Peter Mulryan. Peter, we'll start with you, and maybe you might just tell us a little bit about the gin industry and your own business.
Well, we've been in business now for 2 years, at the end of our second year, and believe it or not, we were one of the earlier companies to the party. That's how recent this innovation is. It's 3 years since Dingle kicked it all off.
Wow.
with their gin. So it is incredibly short term when you think about it. It's all to do with fashion. I mean, as you mentioned in your introduction, when we were kids, gin was something the granny maybe drank. And that was certainly the way it was until the mid-noughties. And then really, a wave of innovation came from the States with the growth of micro-distillers. And then the majors responded to that with brands like Hendrix, which you just mentioned, which was the creation of an ad agency. So the whole thing has spun since then, hit the UK, and then eventually arrives in Ireland. And here, a few unique factors have played into it. Firstly, the smoking ban in pubs and drink driving. It's moved business from the on-trade to the off-trade.
Okay.
And that's important because the consumer is then driving it rather than the bar.
Okay. And is there a correlation between gin and whiskey? Like, we did see whiskey bars, now we're seeing gin and vodka bars.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying that gin doesn't have the same period of distillation or maturity that is needed for whiskey, so it can be something that can be produced quicker than whiskey? So does that mean that we have whiskey players waiting for their crop, so to speak, that will be in the gin business as they wait for whiskey to mature?
Yeah, that's how Dingle started, in that they needed cash flow while they were waiting for their first whiskey, so they started making gin. A lot of companies, like say Ballyvolan beside me here, are making gin. We're just making gin, hopefully whiskey next year. I mean, unusually, the Shed Distillery started with whiskey, then went into gin.
Okay.
But most companies start with gin because you can make it, you can turn it around rather quickly. Whiskey's a 3-year maturation period.
Okay, and just again, so we're really talking about micro-distilling here with the three of you. Mm-hmm. And am I right in saying that the traditional gins that we would have known, the CDCs and that, they're not manufactured in Ireland anymore?
Well,
or are they?
Yeah, it is. Cork Dry gin is made in actually Dublin. It's made in a bottling plant. So it's a thing called a compound gin. Essences are added to ethanol. So the bar here was quite low for quality. So we were taking, and we are taking, business away from imported gins from the likes of Hendrix and brands like that, which are coming in from the UK and from further afield.
Okay, that's very interesting, Peter. Stay with us. We'll be back to you in a minute. And your company, again, of course, is Blackwater Distillery. Anthony Jackson, Ballyvolan, a co-founder, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
I believe Ballyvolan means the place of the leaping heifer. And you have Bertha's Revenge. And again, a lovely piece of branding you've brought in a bottle here to show us. Lovely packaging, a great story around the product. A lot of distilling seems to me, and again, as somebody who's just observing, the story is everything here.
Thank you very much, Bobby. Delighted to be here. The story is a big part of it. It's not everything, but it's a big part of it. And I think when you've got something special and you want to set yourself apart from the others in a very, very busy market, you've got to have good presentation in the form of packaging, a good, honest story, but fundamentally a really good product. So you drew our attention to the cow. That all comes back to our base spirit, which is our building block, our initial building block with Bertha, which we use whey alcohol as our base spirit as opposed to a grain alcohol. And that for us has been really, really important. We found it a bit by accident.
And sorry to cut across you, Anthony, but does the consumer care there, whether it's grain or
care,
do they know enough?
They might be a bit nervous of it. I don't care about it. But for us, it was a quality thing. It had to be good enough. to work, and it was recommended to it, and we tried it with Peter here beside us, and it did work. And people look at a milk gin and sort of ask the question, how can you make gin out of milk? And then, you know, we go into the whole manufacturing process. It's actually the whey, which is a waste product from the cheesemaking industry, and that's fermented, which was developed by an Irish company, Carberry, back in the 70s, and then that's distilled twice, and then we add our botanicals and distill it again. So it's a really, really pure product, but that's hence the cow bovine connection.
But it bovine gin, I love it.
Well, you got yourself set yourself apart. But going back to your initial question, I mean, it's very important to have a good story, but you've got to be able to stand over your story.
Okay. Just before we bring in Emily in from Gunpowder Irish Gin, Peter was very helpful to you, and again, I'm delighted to see that there's solidarity and. You know, like for a competitor, effectively, to come along and, you know, help.
Absolutely.
And am I right in saying, Anthony, that you were really very green when you got into this
business? Both Justin and I were very green, but we were like sort of two boys in the chemistry lab at the beginning of it. When we decided we wanted to make the gin, that was great. And the next question, we started scratching heads, right, what sort of gin are we going to make? And what sort of market is there out there? So between looking for ideas in here and in England mainly, and through our local enterprise office in Cork, and very much with the help of Peter, who held our hand at the beginning and showed us, you know, basically the fundamentals of gin distillation, we got help all along the way. And it's at the level we're at, sort of the small batch level, it's a very much a collegiate business here in Ireland. And I think globally, we all want to help each other. We're there for the common good, and, you know, the old adage that a rising tide floats all boats, and we're all in it together.
Excellent.
And it seems to be working very well.
Now let's bring in Emily Cox. She's been waiting patiently there to tell us about the Drumshambo Gunpowder Irish Gin. Emily, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Bobby, and I'm delighted to hear what Anthony and Peter have been saying about supporting each other, because we would be very much all about that. There is plenty of room for Irish distilleries, for Irish gins and the growth of Irish gins, as long as they're authentic and high quality, and I think that's the key message we'd all be working with, because the gin market is growing and there are a lot of players in the market. However, the ones that are going to survive long term are the authentic ones.
Of course, they are. Applies to anything, really, Emily, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Like, Ireland has an excellent reputation for Irish whiskey. It has paved the way for super premium gins, but we need to keep the standards high, and that's what it's all about. So, just to tell you a little bit
about
our game.
Absolutely, tell me. And Pat, I know Pat, who's your founder, and we know Pat as well, of course, from he was the man who invented Brew Vodka and made a nice little tidy 100 million when he floated it on the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, that's part of Castle
Brand. I got a sense that he might be back for round two.
Yeah, I don't think he pocketed all of that, but it would have been with others. But indeed, Pat Rigney, or PJ Rigney, he's been in the drinks industry for decades. He was with Baileys during their formative years, and he would have brought Baileys into the American and Australasian markets. During his time, and I think this is very important, we're going back to stories, we're talking about Bertha's Revenge, we're talking about the history and what people are looking for. PJ has always been very inventive. He's always been very curious about brands and creating brands. During his time in Baileys, he had the opportunity to invent his own brand, which was Sheridan's Irish Cream.
Remember as well.
Yeah, that was PJ from the beginning, from the recipe, from the branding, from the bottles and so on. Then he later went on to invent Brew Vodka, which you mentioned as one of a very big success story. But PJ Rigney has always wanted his dream, his passion. It's not just about the business side. It's about creating and developing his own brands. So this distillery, and indeed Drumshambo Gunpowder Irish Gin, were a long time in the making. He wanted somewhere authentic, and that's a word we're going to keep coming back to when we're talking about the success of these super premium products. He wanted it in the wilds of Ireland where he could experiment, and it was the real deal. And he eventually settled upon the wild, rugged Drumshambo, where he set up the Shed Distillery. Again, it's only there 2 years, and the first whiskey was put into hibernation on winter solstice 2014. So our first actual brand released is Drumshambo Gunpowder Irish Gin, which launched in May of this year. And again, but that was a long time in the making. PJ, we say the curious mind of PJ Rigney, this gin is slow distilled with Oriental botanicals and gunpowder tea.
Yeah, and that's again where the product, I think, collectively differentiates. There's, like, it's not just gin, there's all, and again, I didn't, well, it's only on reading, you know, all this, you know, I thought juniper berries, but there's all these different flavors, all these different spices. Peter, the craft that is getting that unique taste. I think it's you that says that effectively, what was I looking at? Basically, if you don't like a gin and tonic, you're not drinking the right gin.
I firmly believe that. I mean, I was living in Scotland, and I was part of my story is that I am a spirits writer, and I've written lots of books on spirits. So I was up in Scotland doing some work in a distillery. I met another spirits writer who said, "Have a gin and tonic," and I went, "I can't stand gin," and he said, "You're drinking the wrong gin," and he was right. And I think that's something we need to bring to the market here. Gins are different, and I think this is what's interesting with the consumer. It's because each of us here in this room and every Irish gin will have a different combination of botanicals. You have to have juniper. Legally, it has to be the most prominent botanical you use. But you can use anything else you want under the sun, anything at all, and that's what makes it interesting.
And juniper, that's that pungent berry that gives gin, I suppose, that distinctive flavour, is it?
That's it, yes. Yeah. Ginny flavour.
So you're starting there, and then you're talking about things like lemongrass, coriander, angelica roots, cinnamon quills, like really exotic
anything
stuff.
You want, or gunpowder tea, or whatever, literally anything you want. I mean, we use 12 botanicals in Blackwater No. 5, and each of them plays its own little part in the taste profile of the drink.
Anthony, just going back to your story, have you been able to, and I know you're involved in Ballyvillan, you're in the hospitality business, isn't that right?
Well, so my partner and co-founder Justin is it. Yeah. It's his family home, and he runs it as a small.
And is that where the distillation is taking
again, where we've converted an old cattle shed, suitingly enough.
And Bertha's Revenge and all that stuff.
And so it's in the farmyard behind the house where Justin's father used to run a dairy farm. So we're very, very much on site. So it works very well.
And were you able to, and again, Justin's involvement in the business, did he transition from being in the hospitality business into the gym business, or are you able to run the two of them simultaneously?
We're trying to. He's very much.
When does tail start wagging dog?
Well, hopefully quite soon, as far as our wives are concerned. Anyway, I'm in the wine trade, and he's in the hospitality business, and we're wearing two hats each at the moment. But just going on what Peter was saying initially about sort of the diversity of the gin market. I mean, it's great to see younger people really engaging with it, and I think going back to the story and then the different products. There's a genuine interest, and there's a knowledge out there that wasn't there when you know Peter and I were of a young drinking age, where people go into a bar and they're armed with information and they're armed with they're inquisitive, and they go to the barman or barwoman and they ask a question, they start a conversation, the barman or barwoman comes back to them with an information. So there's a wonderful dialogue happening at the bar which wasn't happening when we were all at our
I couldn't agree more with you. And again, I would have seen this in the coffee business when I started in. Like, again, the old days in Bewley's, black or white, and then people start to get interested, people want to know more about it, and all of a sudden there's a market that just is...
And it's great.
And if the market is growing faster than you are, you're in a good place.
And also, I think it's part of a collective in the food, coffee, drinks. People are a bit more concerned now about what they're putting into their bodies. Yeah. And if they can connect, be it a local product, be it a local bread, bacon, drink, coffee, they're far more likely to engage with that, and which is great for us.
Can I ask about the capital investment in terms of I'll just
leave now.
Well, I assume, and again, I've read more so on the whiskey front, but I'm staggered at the level of invest. Now, I know that there's a micro level, but I'm staggered at the cost and the level of entry, capital entry into some of these projects. And you're waiting 5 years or whatever you're waiting to get your product out the other end. Like, it's not for the faint-hearted.
It isn't. I mean, I know that Justin and I, through circumstance, we didn't have a huge amount of backing, and we've managed to do it quite organically. We've invested in sort of not top of the range stills, and we've sort of grown it organically, but we're at a point now where we need to look for investment to be able to grow the business effectively. I know some people have jumped into the market very enthusiastically and spent a fortune. Some of them may be able to afford it, and some of them are struggling a little bit, you know. And that, as Emily was saying, it's a competitive market, and I'd be a little bit concerned unless you've got a very, very good plan, some good backers, and passion within the company. It's going to be difficult to
Emily, just on that point, again, I presume the export market is the big prize. reputation and connections in the drinks business, and again, this is where PJ or Pat, as I know,
is fundamental.
Yeah, that bit about, it's one part, and it's a huge challenge getting this quality product ready for market, but actually getting it from where it's distilled to market is another whole other day's work.
Absolutely, a whole other day's work. So, talking about investment, we would have, PJ would have actually had investment in the casks, the first casks of whiskey. So a lot of them are already pre-sold before they're even ready, which is minimum 3 years and a day, just to give you an idea. You know, it's a tough business and you have to keep it tight to make it pay eventually. But the connections are huge. I mean, at the end of the day, PJ's been in this business 3 decades. He's travelled the States. He's travelled Asia. He
knows where the market is.
He does know and he understands the market and he knows where he's going with it. And he's also the chairman of Irish distribution, drinks distribution company Dalcassian. So we have the route to market.
Yeah.
He already has the connections in the States. He already has the connections in Asia. He's travelling constantly. As you know, today he couldn't make it himself because he's off developing the market in Budapest. And but you need all of that because it is massive and the guys know it. It's a tough business. And in terms of getting into the big players, like the States is a hugely challenging market. You're not just competing with Irish gins. Actually, in fact, I think we're helping each other out on the Irish gin side. But it's all the local distilleries. They've got about 1,000 distilleries in the States at the minute, all doing their local produce. And people are going towards this, wanting local produce. They want to buy things that are local and have a story behind it.
Last word to you, Peter Mulryan. You're a former TV producer, again, an author. Are you glad you made the move into production, so to speak?
Yeah, I think 30 years in television would drive anyone to drink. Bobby, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I'm a late entry to it. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I do think it's an exciting time for us in the business, but I would be wary for the simple reason that it is about, as Emily said, route to market. You can have the best gin in the world, but if you can't get it on a shelf and someone can't buy it, you're not going to go very far. And I think that's something that people should be very, very aware of if they're thinking of coming into the business. And also, I mean, Justin and Anthony and I are on the same sort of pitch now. We started quite small. The next step we need to make is quite a large capital investment. And if we don't do that, it's bad news. So there's constant need for capital.
Okay, well, listen, it's a fascinating industry. I'm delighted that I think we're on the cusp of something big here. I sort of feel it in my innards. It's too early to have a gin and tonic, but I'd like to thank you for your contributions. Anthony Jackson from Ballyvolan Gin, co-founder there. Emily Cox from the Shed Distillery and Gunpowder Irish Gin up there in Drumshambo. And Peter Mulryan from Blackwater Distillery. Thank you so much for joining us. Really, really enjoy that.